Welcome back to an absentee edition of At the Buzzer, a Rafi Report podcast. In our best days, we were the best source of your Colorado Buffaloes news and notes and maybe opinions. But, you know, we've stepped away from the mic to let other voices grow in our stead. And then none of them did. So now we're back. It's a triumphant return.
Yes, it turns out we're both in our mid to late 20s now, and we don't have time.
Yeah, what this I will say, the second that my job gets anything other than like completely low key, my whole life falls apart, and I'm like, I don't know how I'm supposed to live. I don't know how I'm supposed to function. I'm working full time hours. This is impossible. I can't do it.
And I'm working full time hours with fucking six jobs across, and I just lose track and don't know what's going on.
The point, so we're going to switch gears. This is no longer a CE podcast. You're going to listen to us just complain about our relatively successful and happy lives. And I hope that's cool.
As I'm fucking coaching youth basketball in Copenhagen.
Yeah. Speaking of, that's probably the level that Tad needs to be at, right, fellas?
Oh, I thought you were going to use the Freda Foreman transition.
No, that's my favorite World War II military initiative, the Freda Foreman transition.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Isn't that how the Allies won the Battle of the Bulge? Is the Freda Foreman transition?
It was Battle of the Bulge World War II?
Yeah, it's 1944.
Okay.
Late stage war.
I just found out Verdun was an actual thing in World War One.
Did you not play Call of Duty 1 or 2?
I thought it was just the thing that they made up for Edge of Tomorrow, but it was real.
No, it's a Call of Duty 1.
Okay.
Whatever, man.
What is happening? Today is Wednesday night. Your Colorado Buffaloes have just beaten the doors off of an awful Oregon Ducks team in the Pac-12 tournament.
A record-setting performance.
79-30. The Colorado Buffaloes should not be playing today. They should not be the 5 seed. But they have kind of lost 4 of their last 5 before today. They were a top-5 team in the country. I think they rose to number 3. And then they just got... like, nothing really went bad, but they just started losing close games in a really, really, really hard Pac-12 schedule. I can pull up the scores.
So, there was a crazy run that Brian Howell looked at, too, for the women's team. And the Pac-12 is always just loaded when it comes to women's basketball. But there was not a single, even mediocre road game for a lot of the last stage of the Pac-12 season play. Like, every single road game was a top 25 contest, and that's always going to be hard regardless, especially when CU's offense sputtered like it did down the stretch. That makes it real hard to travel on the road. So, I don't know. You keep hitting haymaker after haymaker, and CU just couldn't respond, I think, enough to come back. If you ask me, I think what really happened during that is a lot of teams kind of figured out that CU has two people that can dribble drive, and that's Kendall Weta and Jalen Sherrod, and neither of them can really shoot that much. So
I don't understand. I thought they figured this out last year also, but
but then Sherrod got better, I think, is a huge thing too.
Yeah.
It just became I don't know. CU had a clutch gene all year this year, and I think it got harder to turn to that because teams figured out a little better, especially in like the last 5 minutes of the game, how to lock up that lineup, like just how to make sure they don't do what they needed to. A good example, the worst loss, I think, is that Wazoo loss at the end of the year where CU didn't score for like 5 minutes at the end of the game. They were up by 3 and then didn't score. And can't do that. Can't do that down the stretch. I immediately went like micro. On this part, which is not as fun, but macro level, pretty big fall from a top 5 ranking to a top 5 conference finish.
I kind of planned my trip home. I decided, because I couldn't go home in December, part of why we haven't been recording, because I kind of broke my leg playing basketball and couldn't go home in December. But I switched up my travel plans to go home in March. And part of that thinking was that I would see the Colorado Buffaloes play in the NCAA tournament, because they'd be hosting games as the top four seed. So this has personally affected me. And I need to figure out a way for them to get a top four seed. Maybe it's enough. Maybe they're good. Because, again, like, no one's really going to penalize them for losing three consecutive or four consecutive games against Oregon State, Utah, USC, UCLA. Like, that's fucking hard, especially because three of those were on the road. The Wazoo loss hurts, because that's probably their only bad loss this season.
Okay, yeah.
Are we concerned with them not getting a top four seed? Like, they are number 18 in the AP poll right now.
I think they need to do well in the Pac-12 tournament to feel okay about it. And like you said, I think that Wazoo loss is really the worst loss on this schedule, because Wazoo is not one of the big baddies that you lost to, and you're not going to get penalized for losing to those guys. But you will get penalized for losing, especially the way they did to Washington State. The big problem with that, like I said, it seemed like the offense was kind of figured out. Now, if you come out and beat Oregon by 50 in the Pac-12 tournament, that's a good way to, like, kind of make a statement again of, you know, we figured some of this out. And it's not like Oregon's great. You know, Dana Albin's poised to spread to other members of the basketball programs in Oregon. But that's what you should do on a first game as a 5 seed. Like, you're playing the 12 seed. So you should destroy them. And that's what you did. That's good.
And it gives them a warm-up in the Las Vegas arena. Gives them a little boost. The starters, the main players, didn't really get too tired, I don't think, in this game. Does that set them up for an early tip-off tomorrow against Oregon State?
Maybe. I think it does, but they're on the Oregon State side of the bracket, is that right?
Yeah, they play Oregon State tomorrow, 1 p.m. Mountain Time.
Okay.
Probably after this has been posted, because we don't post this until like 3 days later.
Hey, let's not name
if at all. Or place if at all, last two episodes we recorded, we just didn't publish.
It's fine. It's fine. It just means we have it in the can. You just say the word in the can, and we're good. So we have those in the can. Of the big boys in the Pac-12, Oregon State, which is probably the highest in the power rankings, other than maybe Stanford. Like, Oregon State scared me the least, I think, just because they don't have a superstar that can take over the game in the same way. They have really good players, but I also feel like they rely on elite shot making, which is a great skill to have. But it's also easier to have an off night that way and lose than if you have a Lauren Betts that you can fall back on, or a Juju Watkins that you can fall back on, or, you know, pick your 8 Stanford 5 stars you can fall back on.
Yeah, but I would feel better about Stanford, honestly. Like, maybe
Oregon State, I will say, CU has not beaten Oregon State this year. They have beaten Stanford and UCLA this year.
No, Oregon State,
that is a strike against
I think, causes us matchup issues, because they are strong in deep, and we're trying to win every game with rock fights, which is why I think Stanford's okay for us, because we can kind of beat up their big girls in a way. But Oregon State just lives for rock fights even more than we do. And I'm a little afraid of them. I don't got much more to say than that, but like,
I think they're a really well-coached team. They're well-rounded. They obviously have exploded near the end of this year. Really good time to shoot up the rankings. They don't miss is the other thing, too. They just don't miss shots that often. And that's what's scary is a lot of people on their team can hit shots. And I think the big thing is, I think Jalen Sherrod really struggled against their defense, which she is the entire engine for the CU offense. So if she's struggling, then CU's struggling.
Was that the game we got just completely blown out in the second quarter? Yeah, that was.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, we lost by six, but that was honestly, it felt like a 20-point loss.
If CU wins against Oregon State, which I'm not expecting, but if CU does win against Oregon State, I think top four seed is confirmed. I think that's really all you need. That's a huge win. And we do have like pretty good name brand because we've been at the like the in the conversation since CU beat LSU.
So basically, if we beat them, we're good. If we don't beat them, we just have to wait and see.
Yeah, it's just a disappointing finish to the year because they really did hit highs that I don't know if the program has reached, at least definitely since like not since Seal Berry's heyday, but they're still good. They're still a really good team. It's just not at that level. Like it did seem like a national championship contender was that was meant to be this year.
I don't know.
And go ahead.
I don't know if national championship contender is kind of like I don't think the offense has enough oomph for that. And I don't think they ever did. I think that they like I was happy that they were winning and I was happy that they were like number three in the country, but I think they were kind of number three because teams ahead of them kept losing right when we would win big games. And but I don't know if we'd be accurately a number three team most years. I think like top 10-ish is probably fine. Like number eight, when we were there, I was like, yeah, that feels about right. Because this is a very good team. Very good team. But the offense is a bit predictable. The as much as like Jalen Sherrod is one of the greatest players in Colorado basketball history, but doesn't have the most offensive firepower.
I mean, like she can't shoot from three, which is a huge issue.
Yeah, and then Quay disappears time to time. Vonleh is usually better against the weaker teams that don't have anyone her size. And then like just face guard Frida and no one else can really hit outside shots. Like that's the like this is a very, very, very good team, but they can be dealt with in certain ways.
It can be a one-dimensional offense because Jalen Sherrod and Kendall Weta, I do think are the two best defensive guards in the Pac-12. And probably up there in the country, like they're both incredible. And they both move the ball well, but neither of them can shoot. And we see this all the time too on the men's side. If you have three out of the five people on the floor that can't shoot, and the people who can shoot can't necessarily dribble penetrate, it makes it real easy to kind of pack the paint, except for one person, and dare people to make hard shots.
And that's what they do. Other teams have done that against us with success. I mean, like, usually we've gone on those big runs by forcing turnovers or getting rebounds and running. And maybe that's slipped. I haven't really been able to watch as much as I was earlier in the year. But, yeah, I just see... I mean, I saw Juju Watkins score like 41 on us, so that was fun.
She does that to a lot of people, though.
Yeah. Did you see she scored like 51 points and USC scored 67 for the whole game?
No, but that sounds right. I mean, she is a legit superstar. Like, it really is kind of like her and Caitlin Clark, I think, at the top of this push.
Yeah, but also... I've been thinking, like, how awful it must be to be her teammates on USC. Because, like, sure, you're winning. She's scoring a lot of points. But there are times where she gets double-teamed and she has a wide-open teammate in the corner, like, clapping their hands, calling for the ball, and Juju will still take a step back, contested midi. And then her teammates will just slump their arms down, like why am I doing here? Why am I
here? It worked for Jimmer Fredette, dude. It worked for Jimmer Fredette.
I'd rather
go ahead.
Yeah. No, I mean obviously you'd rather Caitlin Clark, but like I'd rather my superstar, you know, not ice out the whole team.
I don't know, man. I think it's definitely better if everyone knows the pecking order. You know, you need an alpha. You need an alpha dog at the top. And that person should be as alpha as possible. If you don't take every shot, what are you doing? This is how I play basketball, by the way, is I take every shot.
KJ Simpson has kind of emerged lately.
As a alpha dog?
Yeah, honestly.
I don't know. I don't think so.
No, in a good way. In a good way.
I mean, he's been amazing all year.
Of course.
Absolutely. But I...
Yeah.
Like... well, I should say he has. I don't think he has been amazing all year. Let me backtrack. The UCLA games, he was not that good at all. And that Wazzu loss.
There's a lot of games he was bad.
And yeah, oof. But he's still the best player in the Pac-12. I think we can all agree on that.
Who is going to win Pac-12 Player of the Year?
Probably Caleb Love, which is so annoying.
Ew. I hate these awards because they just, especially the Pac-12 Player of the Year, like, it just goes to the chuckers on the good team. Is that what college basketball is about? Because I still, like, I'm still upset Dylan Brooks won Pac-12 Player of the Year. I'm still upset. I think Jalen Noel won Pac-12 Player of the Year, who I know you love, but I always thought Matisse Thybul was the better player on that team.
Yeah,
Jordan Bell was the best player on that Oregon team. What?
Was it Joseph Young who was the guy who wore number zero for Oregon?
Yeah, yeah.
It was, yeah.
Caleb,
I mean, he was also really good. God. He's the best player on the best team, right?
He's not the best player on the best team. He's like the,
he's the most
third
visible,
best player,
he's the
maybe.
Most visible player on the best team.
Fourth best player, if you like Pell Larson.
I don't. I don't like Pell Larson.
Yeah, well, I don't like Caleb Love. let me look. Okay. What are we doing? Does it have to be him? Because KJ's better than him, without question. Oh, you know who I fucking love? I love Keshawn Johnson.
Who's that? I don't even know who that is.
Oh, he.
Oh, on
is a
Arizona,
starter.
You mean?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I know who that is. Yeah.
No, he's fucking. Thick. Keyshawn. Have you been watching him? Because he says 6'7", 210, but he plays like he's 6'5", 240. It's amazing. Dude, I just love those bully ball wings. What?
But they also have a guy this year who reminds me a lot of Daylan Terry, who I know you love.
Okay.
You love Daylan Terry.
Yeah. I mean, yes. College version.
KJ Lewis, dude, I love KJ Lewis.
I haven't seen him.
He's a freshman guard.
Okay, I will look him up. And
why,
then
why are we talking about Arizona this much?
Because we're talking. I was trying to segue into KJ. Okay, let's see. Let's look at KJ's 4-game win streak for CU. All right, just
okay. Yeah, let's just zoom it out and go out to the full men's team. Yeah, I mean. They're third in the conference, dude. They are third in the conference with a huge game against Oregon coming up. Like, that's a pretty good pull out of what looked like a nosedive in that road trip that went bad.
4-game win streak, 27-6-6. 60% almost on threes.
He's almost averaging a LeBron. That's crazy.
God.
His shot looks unbelievable. His shot looks unbelievable this year.
Uh-huh. Oh yes, we will take that. Okay, let's see. Big picture, what's going on with the Buffs, with the men's team? I'll do it. Don't worry. I know you're working.
Okay.
okay, we are, as of this recording, we are 20-9. We are on the bubble. We are 29th on KenPom, 31st in net.
But on ESPN's BPI, we are 52nd.
Which I don't. BPI is also fucking dog shit, but.
It is.
What's the summary? What's the resume basically? We have no good wins. We have no bad losses.
I would disagree.
All right, who's our good win?
I would say that we have a lot of good wins. We have no great wins. We have no.
Okay, sure. Yeah, sure. Beating Washington State at home with fucking Jill Hurlburt playing 14 minutes looks better in retrospect.
That truly was Tad playing with the Madcast controller. He's putting one hand behind his back. I'll beat you even with Herbert out here.
That was fucking awful. Okay. Miami kind of
is awful. They are terrible. We have to hope to God that they just destroy the ACC tournament for some reason. Because what happened, dude? What happened to them?
Well, I did say on whenever we recorded like, that they're just literally no, like, they don't know what's going on defense. They don't, like, I don't know how we got like 25 assists on just backdoor cuts.
Which is crazy because Kyle Smith's calling card. Because Kyle Smith's calling card is defense.
Kyle Smith at Miami?
Oh, I'm so sorry. I was thinking of Wazoo. That's okay. Because the same thing happened with Wazoo.
Wazoo is amazing on defense, but
not against us, man.
Yeah, against us. Let me look this up because they frustrated us.
Miami did not look like a team. Like, this straight up just didn't look like a team. It just looked like a bunch of dudes and Jim Laranega was like, let's roll the ball out and figure out who's good later.
Beating USC on the road is fine. Beating what other good wins do we have? Just a bunch of like we just win at home and then lose on the road.
Which is like 90% of bubble teams in college basketball this year. That's everyone. We had very few chances. See, you had very few chances for like high level wins, and every one that we did, we either lost close or we didn't lose close at all. The Arizona games, yeah, that's fine. You'll lose Arizona, but for like even the smaller stuff of like Arizona State on the road, I know that people were hurt and there's no Cody. Just win that one and your resume looks a little bit better, right?
Don't CSU lose to Cal on the road.
Five point loss to CSU on the road. That one hurts. You probably want that one back. That'd be a nice Q1. Utah on the road lost
that
by 5.
Sucked.
Like you want that one back, you know? Like
we should have won that game. Utah is not good.
No, they're not good.
I don't know why they're fucking ahead of us on the bubble, by the way. I don't understand.
Because they have better grade.
They beat St. Mary's 4 months ago.
Well, we have is Washington, and that's barely a Q1. That's barely a Q1 right now. That's why this Oregon game is pretty huge, because if CU wins at Oregon, that's another Q1. It's another road win, and it's also a chance to stay at single-digit losses. If CU wins out in the regular season, a 22-9 Power 5 team, that's going to be top 30 in net, is really, really hard to keep out. That's really, really hard to keep out.
I do think that if we win Oregon Thursday, then we're in.
Yeah. And I here's my hot take, though. Okay, so CU's playing Oregon on Thursday.
Who I don't think is very good.
No, I don't think so either. They are really soft this year. I think Dante is easily the best player in following Dante. But
I think it's Jackson Shellstead.
My hot take is that CU is likely getting Cody Williams back for this game, and that might be a bad thing specifically for this game.
Okay, why is that? Because he had his best game of the season against Oregon earlier this year.
Because I think right now CU is on a 4-game win streak and they figured stuff out. Like I think they figured out, at least the starting lineup has figured out how to run the engine. Most importantly, I think Tristan Da Silva has been more aggressive, and I think part of that is because he has more room to operate without Cody there. And I think Cody Williams is incredible, obviously. Like it's incredibly fun to watch, and I'm sad that he's been hurt so much his one and only year in college, because he's just a fun player to watch. But he also takes the ball a lot. He's not bad with it. He just does take the ball a lot. And when you have KJ and Cody as twin engines, that can be really good. But I think it also hurts someone like Da Silva, who needs to be coaxed a little bit into action, like into being everything he can be. Like I think it's harder for DeSilva to start a game by saying, I'm going to get mine, or like, I need to take, you know, these shots or whatever. But when there's no Cody and it's basically KJ and Tristan running it, I think he feels that and kind of he gets it easier, I think. Like, if you just watch that, I just watched back that Stanford game. Stanford's not good right now. We all understand that. They're not good right now. And they didn't have Spencer Jones. But DeSilva immediately just started running at him. Like, he just was going. And maybe it's the senior night thing, too.
I also think, though, that like Tad Boyle started doing this last year where he just wants DeSilva involved early in the game to get him going, no matter who's on the floor.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I think that we had that. What was the game? He just got hot in the last part of the game and saved our ass.
And last year?
No, earlier this year, because like people were frustrated that he was just getting all these shots. That was Miami. That was Miami.
Yeah.
He was forcing a bunch of shots just to get into it, and then at some point he kind of caught fire. And then almost put up a level.
I mean, yeah. I was just about to say, because I unfortunately watched the Nuggets last night against the Suns, and that's exactly what, like, it's literally exactly what KD did, with just like, I'm going to miss a bunch, and then one thing will hit, and I'm good. And then I'm going to outscore the Nuggets in overtime.
But I think that the Buffs have been doing that with DeSilva playing. I mean, with Cody playing.
I also just think he is more comfortable being aggressive when there's more room for him to do so, or I guess a bigger need for him to do so.
Bigger need, yeah, okay.
And I would love, watching that Stanford game, the thing I saw from that I had not seen that much before this year is what I love to see was the decisive decision of the decisive shots he took. He took so many shots where like it was a quick rise up. If you watch, there's a specific highlight I'm thinking of where KJ is driving. There's a no look to Tristan DeSilva in the corner, and it's not a perfect pocket pass, so it takes a little bit of a second. But he knew he was going to shoot that, and he gets up so smooth. There is no other, like, people are coming at him, and because it took a little bit longer, he knew that, like, it wasn't like it was an empty shot, but he knew his shooting, and it's when he has his mind made up of I'm going to take this shot, like, it goes in. I don't know. It goes in at a level of like, you need to do this all the time, dude. Like, you need to do this all the time. You realize your shot, even if it's covered, is a better shot than what we're going to get, like 50% of the possessions. It's so pretty to watch. It's so frustrating when he doesn't do that. And I'm worried that when Cody gets back, he's going to suck a lot of the air out of the room. And Tristan will be back to like just taking what the defense gives him, which I don't know. I don't like that. I don't like that version of Tristan as much.
Is there a middle ground? Because like Cody doesn't take that many shots. But he does need the ball.
Yeah. And also, Cody Williams is a great offensive engine too. Like, you want him to take those floaters, and his finishing is unbelievable. Like, he has to be the best finisher in the conference. Like, the way he puts shots up. And you need someone attacking the rim like that. I just don't know if they figured out how to play together where all three of KJ, Tristan, and Cody can play to each other's strengths. It seems hard. It seems hard to do.
But I am also worried that I think we have seven good players on the team.
And the depth is rough, dude. The depth is rough.
So like I think I'm like I would rather have Cody and have the offense maybe a little clunkier than be relying on players who I don't necessarily want to name by name. But
well, have we talked about the emerging solution to all of CU's death problems yet?
That Javon Ruffin is back?
No, dude. We're all on the Bangot DAC watch. We're all on Bangot DAC watch, dude. He got like 4 blocks against Stanford. He was everywhere. He's a rim protector that Eddie Lampkin needs by his side.
Yeah, okay. We can fuck with Bangot DAC.
Did you watch Bangot DAC? Did you watch him against Stanford?
I didn't. I watched a condensed version, and I didn't get to see that much. I do see 2 blocks, 1 steal.
He's a beast down there, and I love Eddie Lampkin when he's Eddie Lampkin. But I will say, Bengt Dak did more to stop Maxime Raynaud than Eddie Lampkin did all game. Who I didn't even know Maxime Raynaud was like that good, but he was just destroying Lampkin last night or against Stanford. So good for him, I guess. I didn't see that coming.
Okay, so what's the rotation? Cody is back.
Okay, I mean, Cody, Hadley, KJ, Lampkin. So
oh my God, Hadley has been fucking fantastic.
Hadley's the greatest player of all time. Can we?
We
Hadley's
the greatest player of all time. But he is gonna be one of those like Tad Boyle all stars forever.
And he's coming back next year. That's huge news.
We are rusty. We gotta take care of this shit.
Okay. We're fine. This is all fun to listen to and watch. It's fine.
Eddie's coming back. Javon's coming back. KJ hopefully is coming back. He's playing himself into NBA draft consideration,
he's
but
not
he should.
He's not gonna come back.
KJ?
I don't think he's gonna come back.
I think he's gonna come back.
You're crazy for that one, Hope. Hey, he's not coming back.
No, you're not gonna. People aren't gonna leave if they're the fucking 55th pick in the draft.
Yeah, well, I huge what I'll say then. If he does come back, he better go get NIL money from a team that will actually pay him and not play for CU.
This is a discussion for another day. Because it's hard for me to think. Like, I think that the NIL era just doesn't touch Colorado basketball for some reason, because it hasn't really. And we haven't touched the NIL players yet.
Hey, no one's watching Dalton Connect more than me this year. And it hurts. Oh, it hurts every time.
It hurts every time. Best player in the country. Should have been ours.
And he would have fit in real well, which everyone is saying. But
yeah. Also, Chance McMillian has been great with Texas Tech. Don't look at that.
Has he? I have not paid attention there.
Yeah, he's been a consistent 10-point a game, 40% from three type guy on a good Texas Tech team.
Well, that'd be cool.
I forgot the others that we were going for, the other sharpshooters. Okay, so we can rely on Luke off the bench, of course. Julian Hammond, is any word on him?
I'm fine if he doesn't play again this week.
Okay. Javon Ruffin has been better. He's still
I love that. Good. It's so I love that. I love him, man.
I still don't think he's there athletically, but he'll get better.
I hope so.
Bengt Dak is super interesting. And then Assane Diop is, I mean, he's going to be good.
Dude, Assane Diop is a defense. I love him on the defensive end. Him on the defensive end. Especially as a rebounder. He is really, he's one of those Tab Boyle guys that like will attack rebounds. And I don't know how many of the people on the team attack rebounds like that.
Just Cody and Javon, basically.
Yeah, Cody's surprisingly good at it.
Are you confident against Oregon?
No. The team on the road is an adventure and the best of days. I'm glad that Cody's coming back, but he'll be rusty. I do like that Ruffin's in there as a shooter. I like that extra guard depth. Hammond would be great as a shooter as well, but I also kind of just want to make sure that we keep letting KJ cook. It's possible that KJ does the classic. I would love to see some Kemba Walker oh my God, who's the guy after Kemba Walker that was shittier?
Shabazz Napier.
Shabazz Napier out of him and just be like, nope, I'm making sure that we're going to the tournament.
LeBron made the Heat draft Shabazz Napier and then he left.
I was literally about to mention that. I also think about his quote all the time when I get to NIL of how he had to have sleep for dinner sometimes.
I think about that too. Yeah. Been on that grind. Okay. I think, wait, do you think, this is a question. If this team absolutely has to win, is that going to help them or not? Or hurt them?
That's a great point. That's a great question. And I think a lot of that depends on how you feel about Tad Boyle as a coach.
Okay. clarifying, please? I don't know how this reflects about Ted Boyle, because historically his teams have basically been like, if they give a shit, they should do better, and sometimes they just don't give a shit.
Right. I think if you feel I think tactically, I think Ted Boyle as a tactician is probably at him at his worst, right? Like, I think Ted Boyle
yeah, sure, yeah.
is not a in-game adjustments guy, and there are absolutely times where I'm like, why is this the rotation? You know, like, that is real. And if, and so if you feel like, okay, Ted Boyle, like, we need a tactical coach that will, like, scheme us through this because we don't have the talent advantage, then you're not going to feel good about this. I do think what you said is true, where, like, I think he's also pretty good at getting his players to buy in. And in terms of pure effort, I think CU will try harder than 99% of teams right now to get into the tournament. I also don't ever question Eddie Lampkin's effort or KJ Simpson's effort. Like, they're not going to quit. Same with, and I mean, Luke O'Brien, talk about a senior. Talk about our favorite boy on senior day. Like, that is your classic senior hometown kid of, like, he's going to do everything possible to make sure he doesn't lose.
Yeah. Javon goes hard. He's got that dog.
Always, though. That's always true. I love him so much. I
fucking love Javon Hadley so
much. Now he has a little step back three, too. He's a little three action. Oh, my God.
God, this team is way better than they have shown. That's the frustrating thing.
Well, exactly. That's why people are kind of pissed.
And I still, no, it's just, why can't we hit shots against Florida State? Like, why can't we fucking not lose to Cal? And then the Utah, like, those are the three games for me that are just bothersome.
I don't have an answer for you. I mean, Cal has also knocked off some teams this year. It's not like they're nothing.
I know, I understand that, but we had, like, an awful team that day, and then we just let them take whatever threes they wanted to, basically. I think they hit, like, 9 straight threes. And I know they have some nasty shooters, but
Jalen Tyson.
Yeah.
I don't know. The team has been frustrating, man. It's been a frustrating team. And I wish they were better. And they still have a chance. It's the sad thing about CU basketball, right? Is like, and they're still one of 14 teams that have won over 20 games or more ever in the history. And they're, you know, Tad has 10 of those teams, no big deal. But like, that is the bar we're dealing with. But they can still have the most wins in CU history pretty easily. If they win 3 in the tournament, in the conference tournament, and 1 NCAA tournament game, they're already tied. He's got to get to 24. That's CU's record, what? 24.
Yeah. That's awful.
Yeah. CU's bad as a basketball program. Like, that's what it is, right? But, and say that CU wins against Oregon State to win the tournament, you're tied right there. Like, that's crazy. That's crazy. If you win 3 in the tournament, if somehow CU wins the tournament, that's already the best season in CU history. Like, without even getting to the NCAA, which is wild. Uh-huh. Which is wild.
Okay. So if we beat Oregon, we're basically the 3 seed. Whether or not we beat Oregon State. And we absolutely fucking should beat Oregon State. Please, guys, beat Oregon State. I'm afraid I'm afraid we're gonna lose that game.
They're nothing this year, man.
Okay.
They're not scary.
We've lost the worst Oregon State teams.
That's true.
Didn't they go like 1-29 a couple years ago?
And not 1-29, but it was like 3-29.
The at least the 7th time we've brought this up on this podcast.
We are an Oregon State fan podcast. Mm-hmm. My favorite Mountain West team.
Man. What am I saying? Okay. So let's say they beat Oregon. They beat Oregon State.
Okay.
They're in the tournament, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think if CU wins out, they're in the tournament. I agree.
Okay. If they lose to Oregon, beat Oregon State, I think they need one more in the Pac-12 tournament, maybe two.
I think, yeah, if you split the trip, you need to win some more. And if you split the trip, you should still probably be in like a bye situation. I think Oregon is the big issue there, but I think you'll be four seed if you split the trip.
We'd still be the four, most likely. Yeah.
So that's great. Like, getting a bye is huge, obviously. But what you want to do is get to third.
If we beat Oregon State, we're the four. For sure.
You want to beat Oregon State. You want to beat Oregon, so that way you can avoid the Arizona side of the bracket.
Yes, yes, yes. That's what I wanted to mention. Yeah. So the three, we'd probably play UCLA second round if they get through. And then we would be on the Washington State side, who has been tricky for us, but I still would prefer that to fucking 3-28 Oregon State.
You do not want to deal with you don't want to deal with Arizona. Arizona is a really bad matchup for CU this year, as evidenced by the two times that CU played them.
And honestly, our only chance of winning the Pac-12 tournament basically is Arizona losing before we get to them, if we get to them.
But you don't have to win. You just have to if CU gets to the final, which is a three seed, they have a pretty good chance. That's a good spot to be in.
I mean, if we get in, I think we're in. If we get to the final, we're in.
Because that'll be at least one more Q1 win.
Yeah. Yeah, because then we'd have to get through basically UCLA and Washington State to get in, and I think that's enough.
I hope you're right. We'll see.
I'm pretty sure I'm right on that.
So CU has a great metric, like we said. They're top 30, man. Like, we're top 30. It's not mm-hmm. out of
even,
the realm
even
of
if
possibility.
We lose, even if we lose to Oregon, then we beat Oregon State, I think we'd match up against Utah in the second round, and it'd be the 4-5 matchup. And even then, I think beating Utah once would eliminate Utah from the bubble, and then I think we'd get in still.
The other issues with and other bubble
that
teams
one is
to watch for right now is a few teams in the Big East, St. John's and Providence. Wake Forest had a huge loss last night, so they are pretty far down the list now, as did Ole Miss. Although I think the SEC as a whole is overrated right now, but whatever. So, big one to watch out for always is Utah. Big one to watch out for is St. John's and or Providence. If Providence goes on a run, that'll be a pretty big blow. The other thing to care about, too, is on these conference tournaments, CU's played Richmond, and if Richmond wins, they'll take the auto bid, but the Florida Atlantic will take an at-large. You want Florida Atlantic to take the at-large for that tournament because they want to win the tournament, so that way the at-large becomes the automatic winner, because Richmond's not going to end unless they win the whole thing. So, like, you basically want to reduce the amount of at-large that will go to not Power Six conferences, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, so Dayton's not on the bubble. They're basically in, right?
Yeah, because their metrics are great. They've played like the easiest schedule of all time.
And they're only still 23-6, which is obviously very good, but mm-hmm. like not that much better than us. They have not played anybody. I mean, they lost to Houston, and that's it. Man, that's annoying.
Let me end with this question, because I think we both love him. But where does KJ Simpson rank for you in terms of all-time CU players?
This is hard, because I think in terms of a scoring guard, I think he's our best scoring point guard since Chauncey.
Okay.
In terms of setting up, having a whole offense around him, he's not at Dinwiddie or McKinley's level.
Mm-hmm.
And then in terms of all around, I'd still put him below Derek White.
Derek White, how much I love you.
Because I think Derek White is the best point guard of the Tad Boyle era overall.
Yeah, well, it's just hard because you have 1 year, and that 1 year was incredibly disappointing, but he was not
well, not because of him.
I think, so in my head, my favorite of the pantheon you just said is easily McKinley Wright. Like, McKinley Wright is easily my favorite. I think KJ Simpson is the most fun. Like, I think he's just the most fun. He'll yam on people. He's flashy. He talks. Like, his stroke is gorgeous. It's a beautiful shot now. He's beautiful. He's so fun. But he's, for me, like, McKinley as an emotional, it just felt more emotional to watch McKinley succeed. And that's, I guess, for a few different reasons, but he's going to watch him grow up a little bit better, more. Maybe a little more rough around the edges. So when he's sanded them off, it's a little bit easier to root for that. And then, like you said, Derek White is just sad. It's just sad for me to think back on watching Derek White, because he was so good. And I just kept thinking, if the NCAA didn't deny his waiver to move up from D2 to D1 for no reason in the same university system, we would have had a senior Derek White, senior Josh Scott, sophomore George King tournament squad, which is like that. That would be CU's best team. That would be CU's best team.
Yeah, I would also say that part of the McKinley Wright allure is that we were both on campus during his time.
Yeah, and also personal. Evan Batty and that whole like graduating class.
And we also like know these guys more so. So yeah, it's hard to, because if McKinley Wright had this scorcher, like to averaging 26 points a game to finish the season, I'd be saying like, oh, we need, like, he's the best point guard we had since Chauncey, full stop. And it's not like KJ's not a great defender either. What
do you think it's? Do you think it's defense thing? I can't figure out why that is for me either. Like, KJ's numbers are disgusting. They're so good. And I think it's the difference is.
It's the aura.
I think it is too. I don't know why why it's different for me though.
Like, are you rating Spencer ahead of him?
No, I think Spencer, which is crazy because he was like the first great one. I think Spencer's fourth. I would put it, I guess, in terms of like pure who's the best player we've seen as a point guard under Tad Boyle. Number one, Thomas Akinvili. Number two.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Number two, Lazar Nikolic. No, but I think it has to go Derek White, McKinley Wright, KJ Simpson, Spencer Dinwiddie. Which is why he's fourth. Wait.
It goes McKinley first?
No, Derek White in terms of just best player.
Okay. Yeah. Derek White I think is the best player. Oh, that's interesting, because I think if you do best player, I still think Dinwiddie would be second, which is crazy. Because I just think he had, like, all-around player. Like, he didn't actually, like, he was so controlled and so measured that it didn't feel like he had to take over, but he would if he needed to. And maybe that's because he had a co-point guard with him.
As a Booker?
Yeah. That team was filthy. Oh, my. That starting five was so good.
Yeah, exactly. The other thing is he got to grow up in the shadow of Carlin Brown and Alec Burks and Nate Tomlinson, which is a really good thing to come into.
Yeah, not Burks. Burks was gone.
By the time – oh, yeah, that's true.
And also I think part of we deify Dinwiddie a bit because he was cut down in his prime with like that was a like 15th ranked team in the country, and he tears his ACL and the team
team also would have been the best.
Yeah,
because then you had Jaron Hawkins point guard for the second half, and that's tough for everyone.
And are we sure? Like, KJ is probably like a better player than McKinley Wright.
In terms of numbers, yes. But for some reason, to me, the impact feels smaller, and I don't know why that is.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's like pure point guard versus scoring guard type of thing. Chris Paul versus Steph Curry type thing.
Chris Paul versus Deron Williams. Who's better?
Actually, yeah, that's actually a better. Thank you. Fuck Deron Williams. Absolutely.
Why?
Fuck Deron Williams.
Why?
He's probably my least favorite. You're a closeted Jazz fan and you tried to hide that.
The Deron Williams, Carlos Boozer pick and pop is undefeated. And they give me some AK-47 in there.
Okay, Mehmet Okur. You cannot bait me with the Kirilenko talk because I fucking love Kirilenko. But Boozer and Williams are my two least favorite players, basically, of my childhood of basketball.
You're crazy,
of
man.
Professional sports.
You're crazy.
Fuck
for
those
this one,
two.
Man.
Fuck Brady Heslip. I fucking hate Deron Williams. And I was happy that his career kind of short-circuited. But second least favorite player, by the way, is Mason Plumlee. For all the Nuggets fans out there. What?
Why? Why Mason Plumlee?
He thinks he's God.
Have you seen him?
Yeah, he thinks he's 150% the player he is. More so than
I love the confidence. Go nuts.
I don't. Because I had to watch him on the Blazers and the Nuggets.
That's on you. I mean, shout out Jabari Walker, though. Let's go, Jabari. All right, I have to go. We did not get to football at all, but they're still there doing it. And Deion Sanders is on his book tour, so.
I did not want to talk about football, to be honest.
I know. Oh, I know. The only person who got less interested in football when Deion Sanders
we also
got
didn't
hired.
Talk about CU lost a recruit, Dorian Onwuchekwu.
We don't know. We don't know if it's a loot. I don't know what the situation is.
Okay. But something weird is happening.
Yeah. I don't know if it's an ambitions thing or – but it didn't seem – it seemed mutual, at least that Tad's doing him a solid if he didn't want to go. But he's getting sniffed around by some pretty big programs. He had a huge senior year.
Yeah, because he's a fucking top 100 recruit. 6'10", 250, nice footwork, nice touch. I'm upset he's not going to come, but maybe there's a reason. I don't know.
Because we have so much NIL money now that we can just spend money on high-impact transfers, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the Eddie's coming back, and the Asanjop and Bangat Dat look like players. We still got a nice recruiting class. We still have a very good recruiting class coming in. He was the lowest rated out of four. I actually don't know the Canadian. What's the Canadian's name again?
And this upcoming class, I don't know.
Kasovas.
Yeah,
you don't know either. I still need to watch more on him because I don't know his game. But he's 6'6" combo guard, so it's like, okay, sure, I'll take him. you got anything else? Predictions? Do you think we're going to win the Pac-12 tournament?
I think that CU is going to win the next two games, hopefully, and get in. And I don't think CU is going to win the Pac-12. I think we're going to lose in the second round to Wazoo. There's my thought.
Same.
All right, I really have to go now.
Okay, bye.
Okay, go Buffs. Bye.